Well, we know physicians appreciate the chance to learn from patient cases. To illustrate some of the issues involved in surgery for localized kidney cancer, we met with one of Dr. Chung's patients, Christine, from San Lorenzo, California.
I did not have any symptoms of kidney cancer. I have had a history of migraine headaches, and I vomit a lot with migraine headaches. I made a pact with myself that the next time I had vomiting episodes, I was going to see a doctor. And he said, maybe there's another issue, a gallbladder or something. Went for the abdominal ultrasound. And the technician, in doing the ultrasound, all of a sudden started, on my right side, was doing a lot more. It seemed to be more interested in that right side. Got a call from my doctor 2 days later, and he says, we got these results. We think that you might have kidney cancer. I'm going to send you to a urologist. When I heard that I had the kidney cancer and that they were going to need to remove my kidney, my first thought was, oh my goodness, am I going to have to go through this procedure like my mother did? I remember going places with her, and all of a sudden she wouldn't be able to walk. She went in to see the doctor, and she had cysts growing on her kidney. And when she was about 55 years old, she ended up having to have her kidney removed. They did the incision in the front, it goes all the way around the back. They had to cut through the muscles, remove a rib, and do that to remove her kidney, and then had a long recovery. My dad also had kidney issues. He was in kidney failure. My father lived for 12, 14 years on dialysis. I was concerned. I thought back of, oh, gee, my mom, she had to have her kidney removed. What if they're going to have to have my kidney removed? Oh, they're going to cut me in there, and it's going to go all the way around my back, and I know what the scar looks like, and I know what that's going to be. How will I weather that? And he said that you might be a great candidate for having the surgery done by laparoscopy. Hi, Dr. Chung. How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
How are we doing?
Good.
Her kidney cancer, fortunately, was confined to the kidney. There was no involvement of the fat around the kidney, which is a good prognostic sign. Her lymph nodes were negative, and she had a low-grade standard clear cell renal cell carcinoma. Your chance of cure is very, very good. Overall, your prognosis is excellent.
Oh, great.
In her case, what we basically do is insufflate the abdominal cavity, then put in three small ports, working ports, to remove the kidney. After the kidney is completely disconnected, we put the kidney in a heavy-duty plastic bag, make a small incision, and remove the kidney.
Almost done?
I'm getting there. Don't worry about it. We can always go out to Chinese food or something.
I knew it wasn't going to be invasive. She did, too. So I just said, you know, Chris, it's not going to be as bad as your mom's, as long as you take a little pain med and we just go from there.
She basically was back on track within 3 weeks, and she was out of the hospital in 2 days. Her prognosis is excellent. Fortunately, her kidney cancer was caught in a very early stage.
I don't have radiation. I don't have chemotherapy. I'll be checked by the doctor every so many months as follow-up, but I'm cancer-free.
We'll just make sure we keep on top of her by annual chest x-rays and a CT scan at 6 months post-operative.
For me, it has really kind of felt like a bump in the road, and I'm going right on with the new dreams and the new things.
Ben, what a great story. It certainly brings home the point of the incidental tumor. Sounds like she went in to get her gallbladder checked, and they found a kidney tumor.
How large was the kidney tumor?
Her tumor was approximately 7 centimeters. And the reason we couldn't do a partial nephrectomy on her was because the tumor was infiltrating most of her kidney, so technically it was not possible.
How does laparoscopic nephrectomy compare with older surgeries?
Well, laparoscopic nephrectomy has obviously not been around as long as those older surgeries, but in our contemporary comparisons, it appears to compare very favorably, from a cancer control standpoint especially. There are certain limitations to this kind of modality of therapy, and those include bulky lymphadenopathy. Caval thrombi cannot be approached laparoscopically. Gross local extension of tumor makes for a difficult laparoscopic procedure. So, laparoscopy is a technique, and it's a technique that can be utilized to patients' great advantage. One has to be aware that it's not a technique that's amenable to every single tumor that comes through the door.
Well, Christine told us how the decision was made to do a total nephrectomy.
My first urologist thought that there was a possibility that I may only need to have part of my kidney removed. It turns out after they did the CT scan and all, that then the doctors at Stanford looked at it and knew right away when I was going in that they would remove the entire kidney.
If Christine's tumor had been smaller, Dr. Chung, would a laparoscopic partial nephrectomy procedure have been a good option for her?
Absolutely. She's a young, healthy patient, and she had a normal contralateral kidney as well, so that makes my life a little bit easier. But from a laparoscopic standpoint, if the tumor has been, let's say, 4 centimeters or less in a favorable location, she certainly would have been a very good candidate. And let me talk a little bit more about laparoscopic partial nephrectomy. It has a great advantage from a convalescence and recovery standpoint. From a technical standpoint, it can be quite challenging. And I think that's why, for the most part, this technique has been reserved for the tertiary academic medical centers. Overall, in situations where the patient is a good candidate, from an oncologic standpoint, laparoscopic partial nephrectomy appears to be on par with the accepted gold standard open partial nephrectomy.
I think these techniques have really been important for kidney cancer patients. The partial nephron-sparing sort of approach has allowed, obviously, patients to have part of two kidneys as opposed to just one kidney. And although many patients live normal, productive lives, there are patients who develop second tumors in the opposite kidney. And obviously, if one is gone already, that can be a catastrophe. Also, some of our therapies for advanced disease really do require good renal function. So the more kidney that can possibly be left behind is really advantageous in the long run.
Well, after surgery for a localized tumor, what's the next step?
Yeah, I think this is one of the points where the medical oncologist starts to get involved. Mm-hmm. Patients hear the news from their surgeons about the extent of disease and are concerned about risks for recurrence. And so, unlike breast cancer, colorectal cancer, lung cancer, where we often give post-therapy chemotherapy or radiation, in kidney cancer, there is no standard adjuvant post-therapy treatment. In fact, we've done clinical studies over the years which really have sort of hinted going away from that approach. That may be changing with newer drugs that we have available.
I think that's critically important for patients to hear. There have been a number of studies over now, literally several decades, investigating a variety of different agents in the adjuvant setting or in patients who've had all of their disease surgically resected. These patients that were enrolled in the studies were often very bulky, large tumors, or had lymph node involvement and had risks of recurrence, which were substantial. There is some recent data that autologous tumor vaccines or vaccines made from the patient's own tumors may hold some promise in small studies, but in our historical studies, in this country certainly, we have studies with both interferon as well as a drug called interleukin-2, both drugs potent immunostimulators, and neither of those drugs have been shown to have good outcomes for the treated patients. As a matter of fact, there are some subsets of patients who were treated with the interferon in the Eastern Cooperative Oncology Group studies who actually had a less favorable outcome than patients who were observed. Patients are often concerned by their high risk of recurrence, but they really should be enrolled in a well-designed clinical trial if they're interested in additional therapy post-operatively.
I think that is the standard of care right now, that patients who are at high risk for relapse should consider a clinical trial. There's a number of clinical trials going through the cooperative groups, and you can find those trials on clinicaltrials.gov at the American Society of Clinical Oncology website, cancer.net. It's another great source for clinical trials that may be relevant for this patient population.
Well, so far we've talked about patients who are diagnosed with localized disease, but so many patients with kidney cancer have recurrent or metastatic disease. What's the best approach for these patients?
Certainly the first step for patients who may need systemic therapy for their advanced metastatic spread kidney cancer in the last decade has involved the first initial primary resection of the tumor.
That's for those patients who present with metastatic disease.
With their kidney in place. And this has become a controversial point, I believe, in the guidelines. We still favor resecting those intact primaries for patients who are healthy enough to tolerate an operation. But the data that led to those conclusions were all based on some historical studies with interferon or immunotherapy. Given that we've moved into an era where we have new targeted agents with different mechanisms of action, I think it's reasonable to at least question whether all patients should have a cytoreductive nephrectomy before their treatment.
So, Dr. Cosell, how do you decide which therapy is appropriate?
Once it's decided that therapy should begin for a patient with advanced disease, there's a number of simple laboratory and clinical features that generally should be reviewed with the patient to help decide this. In the recent era, many of our new drugs have been developed for very specific groupings of patients, and that grouping is based on what's generally sort of considered a risk stratification. The most widely used stratification was developed using a database at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, and they identified five critically important clinical features of patients to help guide therapy. And those features included an elevated LDH blood test, an elevated blood calcium level, any degree of anemia, a short interval between the diagnosis of a primary tumor and the development of metastatic disease, and patients who had more symptoms and were more debilitated by their disease. If patients had zero factors, patients actually had a relatively good prognosis with or without treatment. If they had one or two of these features, their prognosis was less good. And if they had three or more, they had a very poor prognosis. There have been different therapies tailored for the different subsets of patients. And thus, every practitioner should probably sort out which group their patient fits into and then choose the agents which have been studied most rigorously in that group of patients.
I think these factors are really important when we interpret old studies because patients were sort of lumped together and yet you had a wide risk of group. And as Tim said, patients with unfavorable characteristics or three or more of these factors had often median survivals of 8 months, whereas the favorable groups can live 20 months on average. So there's a wide range of that. So it really is important to get a sense for your own self as well as the patient as to what their prognosis is going to be based on those prognostic factors.
What about systemic therapy for patients with metastatic disease? What are the current options?
Well, it's a great time to be working in kidney cancer. We have a lot of new data, a lot of new drugs. Most of the drugs that we're talking about really are put in place for the management of clear cell carcinoma. Those drugs are different than what we had been using in the past, primarily immune therapies, drugs like interferon, interleukin-2. They have been sort of the comparator arms, primarily the interferon, in our newer studies of new agents. The new agents really target the blood supply of the tumor or growth factor pathways that are important in how cancers get an advantage. These drugs allow us to block those pathways and allow us to get the advantage.
Now, the recommendations for treating kidney cancer are really an outgrowth of the development of all those new drugs that we have. A number of these drugs have been tested in randomized phase 3 trials, and they showed benefit compared to the control arms, and thus they received the NCCN guideline highest level of recommendation, and that would be a Category 1 recommendation. For example, sunitinib, which is an agent which blocks the activation of a number of receptors, including the VEGF and the PDGF receptors, is got a Category 1 recommendation for first-line therapy for clear cell patients. Temsirolimus is an mTOR inhibitor. It has a similar recommendation for the patients with multiple high-risk features, as opposed to sunitinib, which was really approved for the good and the intermediate-risk patients. More recently, both the Europeans and the Americans have studied bevacizumab interferon, and it appears to have a similar activity in good and intermediate-risk patients as sunitinib, and also has Category 1 recommendations. Unfortunately, a number of our older agents haven't been studied in such a rigorous fashion, and therefore, the guidelines weren't able to assign Category 1 recommendations. For example, high-dose interleukin-2 is used for selected patients with metastatic disease. Sorafenib, which works similarly to sunitinib, also was studied in a second-line, not first-line setting, and therefore, it doesn't have a Category 1 recommendation there. That said, selected patients with first-line disease are perfectly appropriately selected for treatment with those agents.